It's time for the Access of Easy podcast, the weekly technology digest that keeps you ahead of the curve. Brought to you by EasyDNS.com.
Back, everybody, to the Access of Easy podcast. This is number 401, like the highway. My name's Joey. That's Len. What's going on, buddy? How the heck are you?
I thought we were done with Access of Easy. I thought we were done with CBP. I thought we were done with everything. Price of Bitcoin spike.
Are we retiring?
Yeah, I'm done. This is my final show, so hope you all appreciate this.
Nice. I'll be hosting it with a Grok agent after this, whatever those things do. I still don't think, like, I play around with AI all the time for the show, specifically graphics, and I still think those things have such a long way to go. But anyway, it's neither here nor there. What's going on? Did you see the link was supposed to be closed this weekend? But thankfully now, because of the rain accumulation, they are going to be leaving the link in both directions open, Skyway open, Red Hill Valley Expressway open, which is great. I have football on the mountain at 10 o'clock. It probably saves me an hour of driving minimum.
An hour.
If you can't take the link up the mountain, you're in trouble. Everyone's going to be jamming those two-lane city streets. It's going to be tough.
I thought would be hitting the streets and celebrating, given that that guy won the MVP for
O'Shea in Hamilton. SGA, the free throw merchant. He's under some pressure from the media. They play again tonight. I'll be watching that game after this for sure.
Do they have a chance to win it?
Oh yeah, they're the favorite now probably.
Is it Golden State or
no? He's in Oklahoma City.
Okay. Mm-hmm. I don't even know what the team name for Oklahoma City.
The Thunder. Yeah.
Okay. I'm so far removed. I'm still waiting for the Charlotte Hornets. Are they back to Charlotte to Hornets or no?
They are. Yeah. The Hornets are in Charlotte.
I'm stuck and I'm so far removed. It's.
Don't worry too much about it. Those were the good days. Let's get into some of the latest and greatest data breaching and overreaching as we do every week here. Last week's quote, Len: he who has a why to live can bear almost any how. Almost doing a lot of lifting there, I think. That was by Friedrich Nietzsche. I always say Nietzsche. Friedrich. I say Nietzsche, yeah. I don't think that's how you actually say it, but I took a few philosophy classes in university. That's how I always say it. How do you say it?
That's the joke ways. But we have a friend that seems to really enjoy his
Nietzsche. I totally forgot about that.
That first came to mind when I him, so yeah.
No one got that quote, by the way. This week's quote: you don't get from life what you want, you get from life what you are. If you know who that was by, check on the back of all the cereal boxes you've collected since 1985. Put your response in the comments. No Googling, all that good stuff. Don't pervert the process, okay? And your next round of renewals on Mark and the team at Easy DNS. Some banger stories tonight. Where do you want to start? We got to start with Coinbase. I was going to say the same thing. We must. Yeah. Okay.
Well, yeah, May 15th, they disclosed that there was a breach within the fortress that is Coinbase. And how this was done was, the social engineering. They were able to get some international customer support agents to get on board. And they were able to get some data and provide it to these scrupulous or unscrupulous individuals. And the stuff that they got, it's, again, like the stuff we talk about quite a bit in this show, but then a little bit more, like the names, phone numbers, addresses, and email addresses. And that's pretty common stuff. But beyond that, they also got some information related to social security numbers, bank account information.
Most importantly,
the identification, right? For when they KYC'd themselves.
Yeah.
What? Like, that's account balances,
addresses. Yeah.
So then they have a profile of individuals of when they make transactions, how much they have, where they live, who they are. And with this information, a lot could be done. And so they decided, you know what, we have this. Let's take Coinbase to the cleaners. And they were trying to squeeze them for $20 million. But Coinbase wants none of that. Coinbase says, you know what, we're going to turn this around. We're going to put a bounty on these guys. If you happen to give us some information to locate and tell us who they are, we'll give you $20 million as a reward. So, yeah, and furthermore, a payment has to be done, it looks like, to the impacted customers. Somewhere in the vicinity of $180 to $400 million is going to be given out to impacted customers. They say less than 1% of total Coinbase customers were impacted by this, but probably
you
believe? Not.
No, you say more?
Yeah, I just given from the feedback on X and people that have friends that use Coinbase, it seems like there was a high number of people that use Coinbase that were impacted. So 1%, that doesn't seem like it's matching that. So it is what it is. People out there that use Coinbase, got to do something. Maybe move, maybe change your identity, like facelift or some other thing you could do to just change the way you look, right? Because this could be pretty nasty moving forward. The $5 wrench attack is a real threat.
Yeah.
So do something.
You got to be, I'm a big proponent of being like physically capable in a conflict. I don't know how much it'll help you if an armed intruder shows up, but I think it's a good idea. I preach all the time about not keeping your keys and your devices at your residence. I think that's also a good idea. At the end of the day, Len, the big thing is you can't outsource security. This is at some point, these exchanges have to realize this is really the most important thing they do. Protecting user data, specifically the home address of the people who signed up for these services, is critical. There's nothing more important than protecting that data. So if you're a Coinbase user, your home address, let's say you haven't moved since you started your Coinbase account, your home address is out there now. As you mentioned, the home address is a big part of it, but the other part is the transaction history. How much volume have you done? Have you done $1,000 worth of volume? Well, maybe that's not worth the risk. But what if you've done 100,000? What if you've done 1 million? What if you've done more? What if your stack is worth, you know, eight figures? You've been investing with Coinbase since, when did they start? 2012 or 2011, something like that. It was a long time ago. You know, if you've been using them for that long and you've accumulated some significant amount of Bitcoin and now your address is out there, what's your plan? You got to move. You got to move, or you got to hire security or whatever. And there's been tweets to that effect as well since the leak. You know, there's a number of different ways to address this as a user. Like, you could do multi-factor security or like multi-layer security. But, you know, how many times have we talked about stuff like LastPass getting hacked, other password managers getting hacked to get access to files like your private keys online? So that's not an option for a lot of people. You could do stuff like using a hardware wallet. You know, there was a surge in ledger sales last year. Against all odds, I don't know why people are not buying, you know, CoinKite devices, but story for another time, neither here nor there for the moment. But even those devices have weaknesses. Pascal, I think his name is, who's the CEO there, or the CTO over at Ledger, famously announcing and rolling out, deploying this feature where your keys are sent to a server at some level in some way, and, you know, able to be decrypted so that if you lose your device, you don't lose your Bitcoin or your other crypto assets. Very generous language here on this PG-13 program. That's not really an option, because then you're not secure. So what are you left with, Len? You got to hold your keys securely at a location that is not your residence, that is not easily available. Like, I don't want to say too much, but there's options that you can think of in your own situation that make sense. What doesn't make sense is leaving coins on exchanges. What doesn't make sense is using exchanges that take all this data. What doesn't make sense is giving your privacy portfolio over to an Indian call center, which is what happened here. Disaster. It's a disaster on all fronts. And Coinbase saying it's going to cost them $400 million to reimburse the losses. What about the loss of life, loss of, you know, peace of mind, loss of all these things for a lot of people, probably, you know, a lot of people, if I had to guess. Really considering their situation right now. Terrible all around. Coinbase really getting off light here, at least for the moment.
Oh, well. Use a crappy service.
Play stupid games, right? I think you're totally right. Yeah, I think you're totally right.
All right, let's talk about this stalker app stuff. And the name's Joey. Oh, my God. Coco Spy. Spy IC.
I love it. It's not often you get the name in the title of the article. This is a banger. Coco Spy? I think that's great. Come on. I don't know anything about your taste. You have such an interesting palette for hacker names. I don't know what you really like. What do you give this one?
No, it's a trio of them. And individually, they're terrible. Combined, it's even worse. Spy IC.
Spysec. Spyic and Spicy are bad, but Cocoa Spy is pretty good. I kind of like that. It's got a little funk to it. I get the other two, I give zeros, but I give Cocoa Spy like a three. I think that's pretty good.
Terrible. Anyways, those three apps that we were talking about with crappy names, they've also have been identified as stalkerware apps. Stalkerware. And they're responsible for getting access to stuff on your phone or people's phones, like access to messages, photos, call logs, and real-time location data. And they do this even without the person's acknowledgement. And these apps, because they're not there shown on the home screen, they're kind of hidden, people are unaware that these are running in the background. And so what some smart folks out there have decided to do, they decided to try to find out how many people are using this. Not how many people are impacted by this, but how many people are actually signing up to use this software as a service, this service as a stalkerware app. Apparently, there was 3.2 million different addresses that were used to sign up for this service. Doesn't mean it's 3.2 million different people. Mm-hmm. There could be a lot of reused emails for same individual, but still, that's a lot of accounts for people or that have signed up to use this. But this has since been, with these particular three apps, they have been kiboshed because they were using Amazon cloud hosting. And when this information was eventually leaked, they decided, the people running the stalkerware apps, they decided to stop it altogether. So it's pretty crappy stuff. And you know what? Like the Cocoa Spy, for instance, they were selling this as potentially a way for providing parental control over a child's device.
I hate that so much. I hate it so much. Maybe
tracking. So you hear about tracking quite a bit, especially for people that are getting a AirTag attached to them, their car, their backpack, or whatever. I know this is outside the whole thing, but tracking is a big thing. And so, yeah, this stalkerware stuff, like, it's pretty nasty. And I'm not sure any way around, like, how to stop this or anything. Just be careful with what you download, right? Like, and just be careful and try to ensure that if you're going to give any sort of permissions to any applications, you're aware of what you're giving it. You're familiar with the name of the application and the permissions you're granting it. You're okay with it. So it's pretty nasty stuff in the end.
I don't have much to say about this, except that you're seeing more and more that there's a desire to scrape devices via apps that they're designed to enhance safety, I think is a good way to put it. And as a result, then oftentimes, especially with some of these apps that, you know, protect kids, do tracking, what do you want to see? You want to see them ask for permissions on your device, right? And once you go down that road, you're really asking for trouble. I know for me, like just thinking of the App Store, the Apple App Store, it always tells you on the app listing what to expect in terms of permissions and why those permissions are being asked for by the app developer. So that's pretty good. And also, you know what I'm becoming interested in now that I'm downloading a few more apps for stuff like fitness and health, now that I have this like Apple Watch, I'm becoming more interested in user reviews. And I think user reviews are an important feature in app stores. I don't know how closely Google Play polices their user reviews for fakes and bots and stuff like that, but Apple's is pretty tightly patrolled. And so when I go to the Apple App Store, I see good reviews that give the pros, give the cons, talk about stuff like permissions, talk about stuff like GPU usage and stuff like that, CPU usage. And you can decide for yourself whether this is for you or not, right? It's going to cost you 5% on your battery every 4 or 5 hours and does this and that, doesn't do the things it advertises this well, blah, blah, blah. You can probably save yourself a lot of trouble going through those reviews, but it's just another step that most users who get got by these types of attacks just won't go to. They're not even verifying, you know, shippers, right? The companies that dev up these apps and put them on the App Store, I doubt very much they're looking at user reviews. So at the end of the day, Len, there's a group of, you know, less than competent users, let's say, for all these mobile platforms. And this is what you get. You're going to have problems with this until that user base either wises up or dies out. And I think they're closer to the latter than the former.
Get your phone. I'm curious to see what ArriveCan gets in terms of user review. Huh. I could tell you on the Android side, it gets 4.8 stars. That's 119,000 reviews. And it's funny because when I click the reviews and see all the reviews, it's like one star, two star. It's all I can't find one. Oh, it's a 3-star. Well, 5-star finally. It took like 6 or 7 to finally get.
Yeah,
to a 5.
They're getting nuked in the reviews here on the App Store. But you're right. The total score is 4.6 out of 5. Wow.
So they're
wow, they, Len.
There's something there. I don't want to say. So yeah, I mean, using the reviews is a good tool, good indication of how it is. But still, I think the Arrive Can unfortunately is an indicator that.
So interesting, interesting data point on your topic here. 2 years ago, this is one of the comments, so I can't verify this, but it probably is true. Uber has 104,000 ratings. Tinder has 40,000 ratings. Arrive Can has 500,000 ratings. 5x that of Uber after existing for, at this time, I guess a year, maybe less. So yeah, interesting.
So
that, fake views. They're going to the. They're even thought. The government going to the bot farms. Oh my god! That's, at least we know we can call the bot farm and engineer the data.
You know what? I think just based off that, the global disinformation index should be off the chart. Right? I'm very.
Have we contacted the authorities about this yet? We need to. We need to find out how we can stop this.
I want to punch in Arrive Canada, the GDI, to see what comes up. Anyways, GDI. It's an organization with ties to the U.S. government. They've been actively targeting media outlets that deem to spread disinformation.
Hilarious.
And this was done by blacklisting certain outlets and sharing the list with advertisers out there and also tech companies, you know, the stuff that Facebook, Google, and stuff like that. And that led to a significant decrease in advertising revenue for selected targeted media companies. And all this is to say is this is a form of censorship, right? Because it, certain views are going to be suppressed, and it creates an echo chamber of existing views. It's not reflective of what reality is. It's just somebody trying to push a particular narrative, which is too bad. So I've heard of the GDI before. I never really looked into it, but
we've talked about it on the show. We've talked about it on the show.
Yeah. But not, what was it? The CBP? I can't remember.
One of the two. I think it was, I don't know, maybe there was a week where there was both, but I know we've talked about it on AOE before.
Well, they target primarily right-wing.
Shocker. Color me surprised. So, yeah, color me surprised.
Yeah, so the disinformation could be a little bit biased in which it's how it's trying to figure out what it is. But hey, whatever. I can't believe this is still ongoing given the fact that the administration has changed in the U.S. in the past 5 months. I thought that with DOGE and with Donald Trump being there, that something like the GDI would be given the axe, or at least a light shone on it and things change, but apparently not. It is still what it is, which is kind of strange.
Interesting that, I'll just read from the article here. The organizations on GDI's radar were overwhelmingly right-leaning. We talked about that. The index included The Federalist, Newsmax, Daily Wire, New York Post, and The Blaze among those flagged as high risk. Meanwhile, GDI, this is really the kicker for me. Meanwhile, GDI elevated left-leaning outlets such as NPR, The New York Times, and ProPublica as minimum risk. Like that's just plain not true. We saw over COVID, we saw during the pandemic, we saw with the Biden cognitive decline, that's now like front page news everywhere. Jake Tapper, truly a charlatan and Judas of Olympic level skill, cashing in on the Biden dementia and now, you know, unfortunate. And, you know, I wish the guy the best prostate cancer diagnosis. What is there to say about these people except that they are like scum bordering on criminal? When it comes to the way they covered the media, covered the election, covered the pandemic, have covered "quote unquote" misinformation since then, who believes this stuff? The answer is nobody. And the reason I think that this is my tinfoil hat theory, the reason I think that advertisers are being targeted, as opposed to, you know, as we saw during the Twitter file release, government going right to Twitter and saying we want these people deplatformed. The reason they're targeting the advertisers, I think, Len, is because the fact of the matter is, people on like the left-leaning broadcasters, specifically the ones I just mentioned who are quote-unquote elevated minimum risk, I suspect they are seeing a real drop-off in advertising dollars. And you see this in the way they're shrinking their newsrooms, the way that they're running their operations now, leaning out. New York Times, excuse me, releasing less and less content. CNN, same thing. They're firing some huge names, Brian Stelter and others among them. CNN cut Cuomo loose. You know, you call it a difference of opinion, but that guy used to get views and now they don't want him. Same with Don Lemon, whatever that guy's name was, or Don Lemon. And so my question is, Are they doing this because they want those advertisers to be forced to advertise with left-wing outlets because the advertisers they had are leaving? The other conspiracy theory you could say is with RFK now in the White House, there's at least a chance, a much more significant chance than, you know, a year ago, that pharma is no longer allowed to advertise on television. And so if you lose that money, like, you're talking operations shuttering overnight. And so you got to force advertisers from the right to come over to the left. Now, you can't take all of them. You're never going to see, you know, Border Gold or Phoenix Ammunition or, you know, what is that one, like, military veterans coffee company? I forget what it's called. You're never going to see those guys advertising on Meet the Press, but you may see others come over that are a little more neutral and just looking for new users, new clients and sales and whatnot, in a way that maybe these other guys are not quite as aligned with the identity and culture war. So I think there's a lot going on here. We will keep an eye on this, but I do think it's interesting that they're ramping up their operation. It seems like even as the administration becomes less and less friendly. And by the way, the American people, I think, are more and more awake and aware to this sort of thing. I don't want to give them too much credit, but it seems to me like they're really fighting uphill in a way they weren't, you know, last time we talked about them, that's for sure.
Do you know that pharmaceuticals are, you mentioned it, they could advertise in US. You watch US TV, you watch US commercials.
Yeah, they can't say what they're, they can't say what they do though.
And the side effects, it's just, it's awesome.
Amazing. I love it.
You still see the guy throwing a frisbee or walking his dog.
The fat guy losing weight. You know, it's like, yeah, you could take this thing, but it might turn your bladder into a fucking raisin. Sorry, Mark, I swore there. Might turn your bladder into a raisin over the course of 6 weeks. And you, by the way, your stomach will stop working along the way. And like the side effects are insane. You know what I'm wondering, Len? How did it get to be that Americans allowed for that level of advertising from pharmaceuticals, but they don't allow it for basically anything else? Like, this, there's pretty strict rules on alcohol advertisement, for
lobbying.
Example. Yeah,
lobbying.
That's exactly right. And so people can say what they want about Canadian healthcare, Euro healthcare, but the reason you don't see ads for stuff like that on Canadian TV is why? The healthcare here is free. There's no benefit to advertising here. Doctors will prescribe whatever they think will work for you. Whether they're right or wrong is a different story entirely, but there's just no incentive here the way there is over there. Smaller market, all those things, right? We're doing some things right in Canada. That, I think, is one of them.
You know that only two countries in the world allow for advertisement on television for pharmaceuticals?
U.S.
being one of them.
And don't tell me.
I'll give you a hint. It's part of the Commonwealth.
Yeah. Australia?
Very close. It's New Zealand.
Huh. Okay.
Which is interesting because I just took a peek and New Zealand does have universal health care coverage.
Hmm. Weird.
I get lobbying must be very powerful over there for their pharmaceutical.
Yeah, field. It's possible.
The thing we're able to get around that. But so, yeah, it's funny that only two places in the world it's allowed and everywhere else it seems to, it doesn't seem very capitalistic to me, like, or capitalism, you know, it's kind of
must be some reason they're not advertising because they don't like money. There must be a reason they're not doing it. I'm not sure what it is. If New Zealand's got them, then I wonder why we don't.
Maybe one day we will. We'll see. Nitrogen ransomware.
I mean, it's so not a good, this is not a good name. Yeah, it's not a good name.
Yeah, it's very unoriginal. Yeah. Yeah. Well, this is used
not even really a good element. Like, if you're going to go to the periodic table, many better choices. Besides nitrogen, I would say.
Uranium.
Anything, really. Yeah.
Yeah. Potassium. So this has been targeting financial firms as well as companies in construction, manufacturing, and technology. And they're using very unique ways of stealing this information. And it's critical information that it's being stolen. And it's spread through deceptive ads in search engines. And it's tricking the users out there into downloading infected installers.
Have you heard this term before, Len? This malvertising before?
Never.
Me neither. It's the first time I've ever seen it. Yeah.
People are doing it. People are downloading this and installing it. And once it's installed in the system, it moves around a network, stays hidden, and it also disables antivirus software out there. I don't know why people are doing this, but
the vibes. I'll tell you why. It's the vibes.
What are they downloading? That is possible?
Why would you ever click the first like four links on Google? What would drive you to do that is what I want to know. Or the right side of the search, you know, like the advertising area. Why would you ever go there?
I've clicked the first few links on
stuff. You know what you're looking for, you're not going. But if you're not, if you're searching something and you know that a Google gives you an ad as the first, you know, first link or two, like you're not dumb. Again, this is what I said earlier about this group of people that's just not competent, and like they'll make this mistake over and over again.
Screw them. they are the ones that need traditional finance. They need a safety net in case they make a mistake, and they need to be made whole somehow. They are not meant to be Bitcoiners. There's certain folks out there that just don't have it, and they need some helping hand. They just don't understand what are the consequences of clicking on something and installing it and giving it full permissions to do so. But apparently there's people in this world, given what's been done, all the education that we have to date with technology, people still do it. Why? They must be after something particular, a particular piece of software that is pirated, or they think is pirated. And in the end, it's just, it's a big mess. Like, don't be a cheapo, buy it, you know, or just don't use it. Get a free open source version. There's lots.
I don't know what to say about this, except, you know, just, it's the other thing I thought was weird about the story is the targets, right? The most notable victims. So there's been, obviously, like you mentioned, some financial you know, companies and some other ones. A couple of weird ones here. SRP, Federal Credit Union, fine. That was in 2024. The one I thought was weird is Red Barrels in Canada. They designed the game. It's either DayZ or DayZ or Outlast, one of these like zombie games. It's on Steam and it's pretty good, but why would they go for a game developer? Like, what is the benefit of going for that data set? What are they looking for there? I'm not sure what they'd be looking for. They're, by the way, they're also like a developer for hire, I think. So if you go there with an idea, you know, they'll presumably help you flesh it out, I guess. I don't know. But yeah, I thought that one was weird. And then the other two that the article mentions, like Control Panels USA, custom control panel solutions. Okay, fine. And then Kilgore, which is a manufacturing company that was also hacked. So, I mean, just a shotgun spray here a little bit. Like, I know that the article uses the word, you know, targeted. I suppose they were targeted in the most literal sense, but like, doesn't seem like there's a theme between the companies that they ended up getting.
Why don't they go after like Ripple? That's like, right? Go after
you gotta
them.
Find out where Brad Garlinghouse is buying his hair pieces. That's the big.
Spending a lot of time in Washington these
days.
That's
because his token is on the way out.
Well, let's talk about this last story. It's a last flaw in Windows Server 2025. I did a search before we dive into this story. Mm-hmm. The market share that Windows Server holds in the server sphere.
Okay, wait a minute. Don't tell me. How many players were there? Give me the top four names, and then I'll tell you the share.
I could see there's Linux on there, Hewlett Packard Enterprise Community, stuff like that. But it's like less than 3%.
Wow. So who's the big dog?
Anything that's with Linux based, it's free and open source, and it's easy to use. At least I think it is. I use it as my daily driver. Maybe I'm biased, but either way, there is an unpatched flaw in Windows Server. So those 3% may be impacted by this. We could laugh at them. And that could allow attackers to gain elevated privileges and compromise the Active Directory users. And so the vulnerability, the name, it's pathetic. Bad successor. Right? Like, come on.
Okay, we got to reassess the rubric here for naming, I think, because I can at least appreciate like an original name. I don't know if I think this is original or not. Like two dictionary words together that kind of sound cool. They kind of roll off the tongue. Do I like those or do I not like those? I don't know. I got to think about it more. For this week, I'll give that one a two.
I'm not going to rate it.
We cannot have you doing Eurovision judging, because you would not like any of the stuff they do. If you don't like stuff like this, you're never going to like those songs.
It's all zeros across the board. Microsoft, they consider this a moderate, like, unbelievable, they only consider it as moderate severity issue, because this could be pretty nasty if you don't patch this. Apparently the way to fix this is just up to date the latest security patches, and away you go. With respect to Microsoft products, I was always under the impression that they periodically, like daily or whatever, check for updates.
Yeah.
And then they install it. Especially with you're talking about servers, the people that are administering this, I would imagine that they have a very aggressive schedule to check for security updates and stuff like this. So the fact that there's a flaw in it, I don't think it's going to be available for too long to exploit. And it's going to be, people are going to immediately be installing the security patch to fix this. So this might be here today, but for the majority of those 3%, it's going to be gone tomorrow. So I don't think it's going to be a big thing that could be impacted.
Security vulnerabilities are like surgery, right? It's easy to call them minor, but when they're happening to you, Len, you know, I don't think you'd be calling it minor. I'm going to, you know, no one ever says they're going in for minor surgery. You know, it's a pretty significant thing to go under the knife. And I feel the same way about these vulnerabilities. In terms of the updates to protect your hardware, software, Windows in its current iteration, I think other Microsoft products are probably following suit. They do a lot more what I'll call shallow update processes. So you might remember when we were a little younger, you know, Windows XP was really the first version of Windows where, you know, you were connected to the internet. Your machine was connected to the internet all the time. It was the birth era for DSL and cable, and everyone was online always because you didn't have to worry about the phone lines. And so Windows and Microsoft, among other providers for software, were able to feed you these OTA updates, you know, with some frequency, right? You'd get like the Service Pack 2 update for XP was huge. Everyone was on Service Pack 2 for years and years and years. And then, you know, 6 months later or 8 months later, there'd be a Service Pack 3 update or a little, you know, vulnerability fix. And they came with some regularity, but not very frequently. And as the system evolved, what we ended up seeing, you know, going toward today is the quote unquote like restart required updates are pretty few and far between, I find, given the frequency with which updates are happening. My computer, this one that I'm using, the CBP machine, gets updated almost every day. If I go to the Windows update thing, it'll tell me that it's up to date. It'll tell me there was a hot fix or whatever. And I never restarted. At least I didn't notice if I restarted or it restarted for me overnight or something. And it's not cumbersome at all. So I don't understand how this kind of stuff happens. When I see something like unpatched Windows Server flaw, that's a problem for me. Because these guys are literally issuing updates every 12 or 24 hours. And for it to be unpatched and have these problems, I you know, it's unforgivable. And like you said there, you know, you're in a market where a lot of people are using other products as it is. And maybe this is why, you know, Linux is not as vulnerable. There's more people looking, there's more people caring maybe. So I'm interested to see, you know, how that server user base pie changes over the next year or so. But
how much more can it get sliced?
I don't know.
3% is pretty bad.
Well, here's the thing, right? Why can't it get sliced any further? Right? We don't ever talk about Linux vulnerabilities on this show. We do. Barely.
We do every so often. And it always boils down to just make sure that your software is up to date. It's always the same type of end result. And yeah, that's, and with respect to Linux, I mean, I'm not sure which flavor people run, but you could set it up that it checks daily. Every couple of days, twice a day, whatever, for updates. And you can just apply them when it show up. But it's been a period of time between the vulnerability being discovered by a malicious actor to the point where you're able to install that's the period of time where it could be critical, where you could lose information. So, yeah, it is what it is.
I have no other comments. Great show tonight. Any thoughts on the Leafs collapse? We haven't spoken since the Leafs collapse on Sunday night last week. Do you care?
No, my life hasn't changed. It doesn't, right? Like if they won, my life.
You are truly the most detached from any cultural, social flashpoint of anyone I know, I'm pretty sure. And I know a bunch of people in Bitcoin. You're top of the list for sure.
I love it. Yeah, I choose to be there. You know, there's so much else you could do with your time. And totally. I choose to waste it in other areas. It's truly wasted, let's be honest. I'm not spending it wisely in a lot of time, but you know, it is what it is.
I love it.
Yeah, enjoy.
Well, nice talking to you. Nice talking to all of you guys too. Don't forget, sign up for the Access of Easy newsletter at accessofeasy.com. We cover the top 5, 6, 7 stories. Depends how much Mark makes, feels like making us work that week. But there's always a bunch more in the newsletter that are interesting and will definitely help inform your views on data breaching and overreaching in the year of our Lord 2025. So that's it for this week. We'll see you next week for 402. Until then, take care of yourselves.
Take care.